Hey everyone, Jules here. I just wanted to let everybody know that this episode is going to be a one-off, so it won't be our usual two-part episodes. We thought it would be a really good sneak peek into what the Trailwent Cold Patreon and what the Jules and Ashley Patreon offers. So we hope that you enjoy this episode on Dexter Stefanik.
Hello, everyone. This is a reminder that The Path Went Chilly is a discussion podcast in which myself, Ashley, and Jules have in-depth conversations about cases I previously covered on The Trail Went Cold. If you're someone who prefers solo podcasts involving one person, my original Trail Went Cold episodes are available for download. But if you're someone who likes discussion-style podcasts and wants to hear myself, Ashley, and Jules get way more in-depth into these cases I previously covered, then The Path Went Chilly is the podcast for you. Welcome back to this Patreon Path Went Chilly exclusive. I'm Robin.
I'm Jules.
And I'm Ashley. Let's jump right into this minisode.
November 19th, 1985, Dawson County, Montana. After leaving on a road trip from Oregon to travel back to his home in Wisconsin, 67-year-old Dexter Stefanik disappears, and his burning car is discovered at an isolated rest area. Only a half hour earlier, a witness had seen an unidentified man driving Dexter's car into the rest area while carrying two containers of gasoline. 3.5 months later, Dexter's body is discovered at a remote dump site. He's been beaten and shot twice in the head, but the identity of his killer and the motive for his murder remain unknown.
After that, The Path Went Chilly. This week, we are covering yet another highly requested case which was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, the 1985 murder of Dexter Stefanik. Because of the popular TV series, I'm sure most of you associate the name Dexter with serial killers, but this particular story is about a victim named Dexter who may have fallen prey to a serial killer. Unsolved Mysteries was a show which could cause you to develop a lifelong fear of a number of things, and right at the top of my list of fears would be rest stops. Some of the most frightening cases ever featured on the show involved people being victimized at remote, isolated rest stops in the middle of nowhere. In this particular case, we have the brutal unsolved murder of an elderly man who was abducted from a rest stop in rural Montana on a brutally cold day before his car was set on fire. And as if this story couldn't be any more on the nose, this location was named the Bad Route Rest Area. Seriously, who actually thought that name was a good idea? Overall, this definitely ranks as one of the more baffling murders on Unsolved Mysteries because the crime seemed completely senseless and there are a number of things about the killer's actions which defy explanation.
Yeah, I mean, we're really going to have to start talking to the rest area namers because Bad Route Rest Area, pretty rough. Right?
It's bad.
Pretty bad. And this is really a bizarre case right from the start because you have an elderly victim. So what's the motive here? You're like, would it be that maybe something financial, or I'm sure you guys will tell me, but we don't all the time see an elderly individual being the victim of some random crime. And I'm interested too, this eyewitness said that they saw someone driving his car with two gas cans. Were they holding these gas cans in their lap?
Well, he was getting out of the car carrying two gas cans. So the initial assumption was that his other car had run out of gas and he was bringing it back to fill it up. But at the time, he had no idea that this guy likely had just come back from killing someone.
Oh my God.
And for the record, apparently it is still named the Bad Route Rest Area after all these years. If you look it up on Google, it still has that name, even after this horrible crime took place there.
I highly suggest you get a pickle jar or something and you just hold it for the next 40 miles until you can get to one that's not called the Bad Route Rest Area.
Exactly, yes. So now let us explore the unsolved mystery of Dexter Stefanik.
So our story begins in 1985, and our central figure is 67-year-old Dexter Stefanik, a retired paper mill worker from the town of Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Dexter is nearly 1 year removed from the passing of his wife, Vivian, whom he was married to for 44 years. Tragically, Vivian had actually passed away on Christmas Day in 1984, while the couple was visiting their son, David, and grandchildren at their farm in Corbett, Oregon. So by the following November, Dexter had been staying at his son's farm for a few months, and David thought his father might spend the entire winter there. However, as the 1-year anniversary of Vivian's death approached, Dexter told David that he wanted to return to Rhinelander. So on the morning of November 18th, Dexter said goodbye to his family and climbed into his Plymouth Horizon to begin the 2,000-mile drive home.
Oh my God. So this poor man is a widower. He was, what, 19 years old when he, or what, 23 years old?
Yeah, he would have originally got married when he was 22.
So he would have been 22 years old when he married Vivian. And here they are going to Oregon to be with their son and their grandkids. And she passes away at the farm. And Dexter stays for almost a year at this location. One, to, I'm sure, be with family. Two, to be in the place where his wife had passed away. And then almost a year after that anniversary says, I'm going to try to leave, right? I need to go and explore and, you know, try life without Vivian in my hometown. And so 2,000-mile drive home. And then he stops, I'm assuming, at this bad route rest area. And the whole plan becomes a nightmare.
Pretty much, yeah. I'm going to get into more details later on because it turns out Dexter probably had other reasons for wanting to make this drive home at this particular point in time. Because I know it surprised David because he just figured, well, it's a month removed from Christmas and he'll probably want to spend the holidays here. But then he just said that he needed to drive home. And of course, they have this very sad reenactment on Unsolved Mysteries where David is actually playing himself and is watching an actor playing his father driving away from the farm. And then you hear on his interview, little did I know that this was the last time I was ever going to see him. So Dexter told David that he wanted to complete the trip as quickly as possible, so instead of spending the night at motels, he would just pull over at rest stops if he needed to sleep. At around 10 a.m. on the morning of November the 19th, the local police and fire department were summoned to a rest stop in Dawson County, Montana, called the Bad Route Rest Area, which was located in an isolated area off Interstate 94, 17 miles west of the small town of Glendive. Clyde Mitchell, a maintenance supervisor for the Montana Department of Highways, had driven past the rest stop and noticed a burning car in the parking lot, so he contacted the authorities. When help arrived and the fire was put out, the torched vehicle was identified as a Plymouth Horizon, and a computer check revealed that it belonged to Dexter Stefanik. However, Dexter himself was nowhere to be found. Glendive was located nearly 1,100 miles from Corbett, so the rest area was just past the halfway point on Dexter's lengthy drive back home to Rhinelander. The last time he was confirmed to be alive was when he stopped for gas in Park City, nearly 250 miles away. Since it was a very cold, snowy morning with a high wind chill, it was feared that perhaps Dexter had wandered off to seek help and succumbed to exposure, but a search of the surrounding countryside turned up no trace of him.
Well, this is weird because, I mean, he was seen in Park City. The assumption would be he went to this rest stop. And at the time in 1984, weren't there payphones located at all of the rest stops where he could have called 911 had he been in distress?
I can't confirm 100% that there was a payphone at this particular rest area. But yes, it was common practice for them to have them back in 1985. But it's just a matter of whether Dexter would have even had an opportunity to reach a payphone before something bad happened to him.
When I think of rest stops, I can't help but think of the movie There's Something About Mary. Do you guys remember?
Oh, God, yes.
Yes, very much so.
He ends up in that car with that serial killer who is like obsessed with like 8-minute abs. Why don't I make 6-minute abs? Oh, my gosh.
But then what if somebody goes back and does 5-minute abs? No way, that's man. 6-minute abs.
That's a magic number. No, but for me, you know, like if the theory was that he would have, quote, wandered off to get help, I wouldn't see him needing to wander off. So that theory alone doesn't seem to make sense had he had access to a payphone or something like that, unless maybe he was struggling with mental health at the time.
And why was his car on fire? Like the way that they found it, it seemed very unlikely that this could have happened by accident. So it seemed pretty, once they found out he wasn't around, it seemed pretty obvious that foul play had probably taken place.
So after the Plymouth Horizon was examined, it was determined that it had been doused with gasoline, and the fire was a clear-cut case of arson. The majority of the accelerant had been poured over the back seat, giving off the impression that this was an attempt to destroy potential evidence. The driver's seat was also pushed back very far, and since Dexter was a pretty short man, this suggested that a taller person had been driving the vehicle before it was set on fire.
Oh my gosh, telltale sign, right, guys? In these cases, when we say check the seat, where's the seat position? Because, you know, a 5 foot six person can't have the seat all the way back and actually drive the car. So this is a huge red flag in this case.
Yeah, that is kind of a cliche a lot of the time when you find a missing or deceased person and their car is abandoned and the seat is pushed back to a different position. You might remember our episode about the murder of Terry McClure, where when she was found, her driver's seat was pushed all the way back. And of course, her son, Tim, was a very large man. So that's one of the reasons they suspected he might have been the one who dropped off the car there.
I feel like we talk about the seats being either too far back or too far forward on like every third episode that we do.
Exactly. That's why it's a cliche in like crime cases. So even though Dexter cannot be found, there were two eyewitnesses who were able to provide some compelling leads. Clyde Mitchell, the aforementioned maintenance supervisor who discovered the burning car, and Fred Siegley, the custodian of the Bad Route rest area. Siegley arrived at the rest stop nearly 2 hours before Dexter's car was found, but the only vehicle in the parking lot at that time was a white Chevy 4x4 pickup truck. Clyde Mitchell arrived 15 minutes later and also saw the truck, but there didn't seem to be any sign of the driver. Both men described the truck as having a wide blue horizontal stripe, a white camper shell top, and a cattle guard on the front bumper. Before Mitchell left the rest area, he noticed that the pickup had Arizona license plates, and there was also apparently some bedding and clothes in the back to suggest that someone had been living in the vehicle.
My goodness. So it was sometime between that two-hour gap where Siegel had arrived at the rest stop and left, right? And Clyde had arrived and that he left before someone set the car on fire?
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty much going to be established that the car was actually set fire when no one was there. But the presence of this truck before Dexter's car showed up suggests that whoever that driver was the one who set the car on fire.
Yeah, super weird. And like you said, it's not abnormal at a rest stop to have people, quote, living in their vehicle or sleeping, because Dexter was going to be doing the same thing, right? He had said, hey, I'm not going to stop. I'm actually going to sleep at rest stop. So that part's not weird. But the fact that this car was there and it's literally within this tiny time frame where the car set on fire, that we need to know who was driving that truck and what they were doing at the rest stop.
Exactly. And since the driver was not present at that time, he was obviously elsewhere.
And we're going to talk about this in a second, about the license plate and what the witness remembers. But one thing that strikes me is that, okay, so you see this guy and he's driving. He's got these two gas cans. He says, okay, like my vehicle ran out of gas. Well, who the F's car are you driving now and where are they?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that caused this person to, on some level, pay enough attention that they did go on to remember what I'll talk about in a second, the three digits of the license plate. But the biggest lead occurred when Siegley was leaving the rest area at around 9:30 a.m. and saw Dexter's Plymouth Horizon pull into the parking lot. Siegley claimed that an unidentified man wearing a parka climbed out of the vehicle, and he was carrying two large plastic containers. Siegley called out to the man and asked if he needed assistance. The man said he'd run out of gas, but everything was okay now, because he'd just gone to get some. Siegley then left, but within a half hour, the Plymouth Horizon would be discovered in flames, and the pickup truck was gone. Well, Siegley described the man as being around 6 feet tall and between 35 and 40 years old. He was a great distance away when he saw him, and he didn't get a good enough look to provide enough details for a composite sketch. Siegley and Mitchell would both later be placed under hypnosis in hopes that they would remember more details about what they saw, but the only information that they could recall were the first three digits of the license plate, 147. So a search of Arizona's DMV records turned up 279 pickup trucks, which had license numbers that started off with those three digits. And while investigators narrowed down the number of potential matches to 60, they were unable to uncover any promising suspects.
But what we do know is that it definitely couldn't have been Dexter, because Dexter's in his late 60s. This person's described as 6 feet tall, between 35 and 40 years old. But like you said, Jules, Who drove you to get this gas? Like, you just happened to have two random cars sitting at the rest stop where you were able to drive this Plymouth, right? The Plymouth to go get gas and then come back to your truck. It just doesn't make any sense. It would have had to have kind of raised, even subconsciously, the red flags in this eyewitness's head.
Yeah, it's just so weird that he didn't bother to ask him that question, but it might be a good thing that he didn't press further, because for all we know, this guy might have decided to kill Fred Siegley as well if he thought he was going to be discovered. But because Siegley was from a distance and left without pressing him anymore, that's why he got to survive, which is a good thing because we actually have one living witness to Dexter's likely killer, but he didn't get a good enough look at him to provide a description. The case left everyone completely baffled, and it would be nearly 4 months before there were any answers about what happened to Dexter. On March the 8th, 1986, a local couple named Bill and Cindy Shock took a trip to a remote landfill in order to dump some garbage. The location was a private dump site on land which was owned by a local rancher, and only about 5 families from the area used it. The spot was 17 miles from the Bad Route rest area, 2 miles from the main highway, and 150 feet away from a rural dirt road. The Shaws were surprised to find a wallet on the ground containing Dexter Stefanik's driver's license, and since his disappearance was still a big news story in the area, the couple decided to perform a thorough search of the dump site. It wasn't long before they discovered a man's foot sticking out from beneath a discarded mattress.
This is very disturbing because it sounds like the place where his body was found was pretty remote. 17 miles away from the rest area, 2 miles from the main highway, and 150 feet away from a rural dirt road. It's a private dump site where these groups of families are using it. How did this person know where it was located? That doesn't seem like it would be chance, does it?
No.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the big unanswered questions of this case, because on one hand, it's such a remote place that you'd have to think a local with knowledge of the area would be able to find it. But on the other hand, that truck had Arizona license plates, mm-hmm. which points to the killer from being out of town. So they've never been able to reconcile these two contradictions and try to figure out who this guy could be.
I mean, for all we know, he may have committed another crime and stolen Arizona plates from somebody else and then put them on his vehicle. If he'd planned to commit murder that evening, for the fact that a witness could come along and remember several digits of the license like Siegley did here. So who knows? There's just so little that we know about this individual that it might not have even been plates to his vehicle.
And the fact that he's driving like a car with a truck with a cow catcher, that seems more like a Montana thing than an Arizona thing. That's the type of vehicle that someone lives in rural farm country in Montana would drive.
So a body was concealed underneath the mattress, and even though the cold winter's weather had preserved it, the victim's face and hands had been gnawed away by animals. Once the police were notified, dental records were used to conclusively identify him as Dexter Stefanik. He'd been beaten over the head with a blunt object, likely a gun, before he was shot twice in the back of the head. According to the coroner, the condition of Dexter's body seemed to indicate that it had been there since he originally went missing in November.
How sad. He had just been discarded like trash, you know? So I don't know the details of what his dynamic could have been with the person that killed him, but it's like zero regard for who he is. He's buried under some mattress in a trash field. It's good for those collecting evidence that the cold weather had preserved some of his body. But like you said, even though it had been cold out, there's still quite a bit of missing parts of his body because of the animal and the kind of debris that would have been on him. But man, makes me really sad to think of him discarded in that way and clearly in a very violent struggle prior to his death.
And there were a number of perplexing questions. Dexter's suitcase, along with much of his clothing, was also found scattered around the dump site. The Shaws frequently went there to dump garbage and had last been at the site 1 week before the body was discovered, but claimed they did not remember seeing Dexter's wallet, suitcase, or clothing at all during the preceding months. Furthermore, since the clothing was in relatively good condition, it seemed unlikely that it could have been lying outside in the winter weather since November. There was also money inside Dexter's wallet and his suitcase, so robbery did not seem like the motive for his murder.
So bizarre. I believe them when they say we've been out here. This doesn't look like trash that had been here previously. I have a huge dumpster outside one of my commercial sites, and I always know when someone illegally dumps in that dumpster because I'm like, that did not come from this property. I know the kind of like things that come out of this facility, and it's not that someone else is dumping things here. So as weird as it sounds, I believe them when they said, I think this came pretty recently. And then the quality and the condition of the clothes and all the suitcase and the wallet, it seems like it had just been placed there. That means this person A, likely did know the location, and B, had been back, which is terrifying.
Yeah, that's the impression I get, is that they deliberately scattered that clothing around because maybe they were upset that Dexter's body had been there and no one had found it yet. So they wanted to leave this additional evidence to try to call attention. And sure enough, it worked because the Shaws wound up finding Dexter's foot. So yeah, you get the impression that he deliberately went back there and was kind of getting impatient that they hadn't found the body yet.
Brilliant. Didn't even think of that.
And don't we see this so often with cases where killers really, for whatever reason, want to have their handiwork known? They want that body discovered. Sometimes they're the ones who discover it and point police or searchers towards the body. But that appears to be the case here. Like, I don't know what the motivation would be when you seem to have successfully concealed the body, why you would then want it found.
Because I'm thinking that if he really didn't want Dexter to be found at all, he could have just buried him somewhere. There's nothing but open prairie, so you could bury him and he'll never be found. But it seems pretty likely in this case that he wanted people to find out that he had murdered someone.
Over a week after the discovery of Dexter's body, police decided to perform another search of the Bad Route rest area and discovered a strange piece of graffiti scrawled in a pencil on the grout lines of a wall inside the men's room. Since the writing made specific references to Wisconsin and November 1985 and contained the word shot, there was speculation that it might have been connected to Dexter's murder. For many years, the full contents of the graffiti was not released publicly by law enforcement. Though when the case was featured on Unsolved Mysteries in April 1989, they did reveal that it contained the, quote, hot jock. We'll go into more detail about this graffiti and the meaning of the phrase hot jock later on, but let's just say that it did not lead to any conclusive answers. So after more than 37 years, we still don't know who was responsible for the murder of Dexter Stefanik.
So I guess you could say the path went chilly. Well, this is one of those cases where you only need to utter a few specific phrases to a devout Unsolved Mysteries fan like myself, such as Bad Route Rest Area or Hot Chalk, and we'll know exactly what you're talking about. Like I mentioned in the intro, that show featured a number of horrific crimes which took place in isolated rest stops. One of these cases, known as the Blind River Rest Stop Murders, was featured on my very first Trail Went Cold minisode, and we might do a Path Went Chilly minisode about it at some point. In the Blind River Rest Stop Murders, which took place in Ontario, the perpetrator robbed the victims before he killed them, so he did seem to have a motive. Yet in Dexter's case, someone inexplicably decided to brutally murder a harmless elderly man, and he did not even bother to take his money, which is what makes this crime so perplexing.
And I'm still stuck on this idea that there was a purpose to where he was dumped and a frustration that his body hadn't been found. Likely the killer then returned to the site where they dumped him. And please tell me you are going to teach me about the term hot jock soon.
Definitely, yes.
My brain is running wild.
All I'll just say is don't perform a Google search for it before we tell you.
Okay, don't worry, I won't. I won't in Google image, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So even if the motive to murder Dexter was nothing more than a simple thrill kill, it still seems like the killer went through a lot of complicated steps to cover his tracks, and some of his actions just don't make much logical sense. Well, believe it or not, police did investigate one potential suspect. And here's one part of the story that was never mentioned in the Unsolved Mysteries segment. After Dexter's wife, Vivian, passed away, he became very close with another woman named Amy Hine. She also lived in Dexter's hometown of Rhinelander and was recently divorced and had 5 children. While her entire family adored Dexter, the big issue was that Amy was only 34 years old, nearly half of Dexter's age. So when he asked Amy if she would marry him, she said no.
I get it. Jules, Robin, you know I like my men older. But this is one of those really difficult situations because he's a widow, which means he's very used to being in the role of husband. Amy's recently divorced, very used to being in the role of wife, and she has 5 kids. At 34, that's a lot to ask other people to take on, right? So I can see where Amy and Dexter would have kind of a trauma commonality where they were seeking a partner, seeking companionship, right? It really enjoying somebody's company who wanted to be part of one another's family. That's a big age difference. So even though everyone liked him, I can see where Amy says, look, there's a lot of difficulties with this, right? Beyond our trauma, there's the big age difference and those kinds of things. So they suspected Amy at first.
I'll talk more about that momentarily. There was another person they suspected.
Okay.
I feel bad for Dexter, though, because I think it's just that he was married for 44 years and he just, I guess, was not used to being alone. So that's probably what made him brashly decide to ask this woman to marry him, even though she was half his age. But unfortunately, I do not think she felt the same way about him.
Yeah, I could see her needing and wanting somebody to fill the space. So that's why she might entertain Dexter. But you nailed it, Robin. I was only married for 9 years and it's so lonely because you're used to that daily contact and that daily attention that every moment is filled and then it goes to silence. So that's likely why Dexter stayed with his son on the farm because it's lonely going home. Unless, of course, Amy had been there and she had told him at this point, no.
And at this point, Dexter's only been without his wife, Vivian, who passed away for a year, right? So I can also understand Amy being trepidatious, going, you just lost your wife. Maybe impulsively asking me to marry you isn't the right thing right now.
So on November the 18th, right before he left his son's farm in Corbett, Dexter mailed Amy a letter which read, quote, I miss you and the children in the family worship. May the Lord be with you until we meet again. Love, Dexter, end quote. After Dexter left Corbett, he actually made a side trip to Washington State to meet a man named Arnold Gratias, who happened to be Amy's father. Dexter and Arnold had invested in some cars together and were arranging for the transport of these vehicles to Wisconsin before Dexter headed east and continued his drive home. Given that Dexter was trying to woo his much younger daughter, investigators briefly explored the idea that Arnold might have strongly disapproved and had a motive to murder Dexter. However, Arnold was quickly ruled out as a suspect, as I'm sure it was established that he was over 1,000 miles away from the Bad Route rest area when Dexter was killed.
Yeah, and is that really a reason to kill? I mean, Amy's 34, right? She can probably fend for herself. Seemed like everyone really liked Dexter. They might not have liked the relationship, but really cared for him. So at the end of the day, it would be two grown men talking to each other and being like, listen, you need to back off from my daughter. And Dexter probably being more heartbroken than anything else. I couldn't see that turning into a massive confrontation.
Oh yeah, like I never saw any indication that Arnold was angry about it. I mean, he thought it was unusual that Dexter wanted to marry his daughter, but I think he understood his reasons and he didn't think that this guy was some creep who was moving in on someone who was much younger. Like you said, she was 34, so she was still a grown woman who could make her decisions. But of course, investigators had to check into this possibility, but they quickly ruled this out as a potential motive.
While this part of the story has no real connection to the crime, it does shed some light on Dexter's rather odd decision to leave his son's home and make such a lengthy drive back to Rhinelander. The Unsolved Mysteries segment gives off the impression that Dexter needed to be back home with the 1-year anniversary of his wife's death approaching, which is understandable since Vivian had passed away in Corbett on Christmas Day, which probably brought back some painful memories. But the fact that Dexter mailed a letter to Amy on the very same morning that he started his drive seems to indicate that she was the reason that he felt the need to return home so quickly. He may have been planning to make another attempt to propose to Amy, and this would also explain his decision to pull over at rest stops to sleep rather than spending the night in motels. Amy would later express regret over having turned down Dexter's proposal, as she probably felt he never would have been compelled to drive home so quickly and pull over at the Bad Route rest area if she had said yes. And that's a terrible burden to live with and just another tragic element to this story.
Oh, poor Amy. I mean, this is one of those things where as a survivor of someone that you care about, you think about those kinds of things. What if, right? What if I had done X, Y, and Z? But Amy was in a place where she was, you know, loved by this person or cared for by Dexter. She, again, was struggling with a recent divorce, 5 little ones that she once loved fearlessly, gets this letter. Imagine how hard it would be knowing and feeling a conviction like, this is not my person. I can't marry him. But that doesn't mean that Amy didn't really care about Dexter. You know, it's just like, this is not going to be my husband. So I can only imagine how, looking at the letter, thinking about good memories they likely shared, and then saying, what if I had? Poor Amy, I pray that that's something that she's able to get through, because it's such a sad part of grief.
Oh, exactly. And I can kind of understand why they left this stuff out in the Unsolved Mystery segment, because it doesn't really have a connection to the crime. And I'm sure they did not want their story going out on national television, because I'm sure she felt enough guilt about it already, because it was such a tragic situation. Overall, it seems pretty obvious that Dexter was not specifically targeted, given that he was in the middle of nowhere near the halfway point of a 2,000-mile road trip. So it's really doubtful that anyone would be able to track him down to that remote location. The most likely explanation is that Dexter simply wound up in the wrong place at the wrong time and crossed paths with a stranger who murdered him. Given that Dexter was planning to pull over at rest stops when he needed a nap, it's possible he was sleeping inside his car at the Bad Route rest area when he was attacked by his killer. Now, the police have their own theory, which involves the perpetrator already being at the rest area before Dexter arrived, but we'll talk about that in a second.
It does seem like it would have to be opportunistic. It would have to be one of those things where you're sitting there, you have a desire to do something to someone, because a rest stop is not something where you really can plan who, what, or when, where someone's going to come. So it does seem like Dexter probably got out of the car, went to the restroom, you know, pulled over, put his seat back, and he was just a really vulnerable sitting target.
Before we go any further, we need to address one of the most infamous aspects of this case, and that's the graffiti which was discovered on the men's room wall. So at the time the Unsolved Mystery segment aired, they would not reveal the full contents of the graffiti, only that it contained the phrase "hot jock" and mentioned somebody being shot. The police seemed pretty convinced that it was written by the killer and theorized that "hot jock" may have been the CB handle for a truck driver. So the assumption was that there was some incriminating information in there about Dexter's murder, which was intentionally withheld from the public.
Ooh, okay. So they're thinking that this is someone's radio name, right? And that some truckers knew something about this driver, quote, hot jock. And they actually wrote this information up on the bathroom wall.
Well, that made sense at the time, but I'm going to reveal now the full contents of the graffiti, and let me tell you, it has nothing to do with truck drivers, I'm pretty sure.
Okie dokie. Well, when I heard the term, I was like, okay, my mind went a little wild, so y'all tell me what it really does mean.
Well, it wasn't until a 30th anniversary article was published about the case in 2015 when the full text of the graffiti was finally revealed publicly, and it read, quote, "Hot jock shot wad from Wisconsin, 1185, Saturday the 3rd.
Ew.
And, well, I hate... Yeah, I knew you were going to react that way. And, well, I hate to say this, but I smacked my forehead the first time I heard this. All these years, I had heard the investigator say that the graffiti made reference to someone being shot, but after learning that the exact words were "shot wad," I see it in an entirely different light. I wouldn't recommend trying this on a work computer, but if you do a Google search on the phrase "hot jock," many of your top matches are going to be related to gay erotica and gay porn. So yeah, once you know the full context of this graffiti, the phrase "hot jock shot wad" really doesn't seem like a reference to a murder.
No, not at all. I'm really confused as to why they'd be like, "Oh, we're pretty sure it's referencing him getting shot
with semen."
Yeah, gross, Joel. Gross.
But yeah, like all these years, I thought this was connected to a truck driver and there was good reason to believe this was connected to the murder. And I'm thinking, did the police not know what the phrase "shot wad" meant?
As someone who's hung out with police officers for quite a while, they definitely know what that means. But when you said it, I pictured like these really wavy, beautiful men in like crop top football jerseys and tiny like jock straps or little volleyball shorts. So my images in my head were very good, and I'm sure they match Google images. So I thought hot jock would have something to do with a little cutie. Not being shot in the head though, clearly being hot jock.
Maybe.
Gross.
Well, Jules just made that reference to there's something about Mary, so we all, that's pretty much the association we have with rest stops now with, for secret gay hookups.
Oh my yeah, Lord. It's come full circle, you guys.
But this is really scary because it has the date, it has this tie to Wisconsin, which is going to be on his license plate, and I mean, this is crazy.
Well, you're going to find that the date isn't quite as compelling as it seems on the surface. I can see why investigators would find it compelling because it mentioned Dexter's home state of Wisconsin, as well as the exact month and year, 1185, when Dexter was killed. But the Saturday the 3rd part doesn't even make any sense, since the murder took place on the 19th, and November 3rd did not even take place on a Saturday that year. So it wouldn't surprise me if this message was a reference, obviously, like we just said, to a secret gay rendezvous, which occurred in the bathroom, and it's seriously just a coincidence that someone from Wisconsin just happened to be abducted and murdered from the rest area that same month. Dexter Stefanik did not strike me or Robin as the type of man who would be having secret gay hookups inside a rest stop bathroom, as there was nothing in his history to indicate that.
There's also the fact that the graffiti was written in pencil in the wall's grout line, so if the killer wanted to flaunt his crime, he didn't exactly write his message out in the open. I would not be surprised if that message was written before the crime even took place and the police just didn't notice it. So unless I'm completely missing something, I'm inclined to think the graffiti has no relation to this case at all.
Yeah, I'm thinking not either, now that you tell me the dates were wrong. I do find it really interesting that the Wisconsin part's there and that it is the date and year. But is this, I'm assuming rest stops are usually on really active main highways and interstates. So it's likely that it's one of those major interstates that kind of spans multiple states and you have a lot of traffic from Wisconsin going through there. So maybe it's not that ironic anyway.
And if it was written after the crime, then maybe someone read about the murder at the rest stop in the newspaper and just decided to make reference for it for fun.
And like, how weird is it really? I mean, there's what, 50 states? So you had a 1 in 50 chance that it could have been like the same place? It doesn't really seem that odd to me, especially when the dates are off. And then it's like picturing investigators reading this, like hot jock shot wad, and they assume that it is involving a murder. It just seems so inexplicable that they withheld this from the public, because if they told the public would have been like, ladies and gents, that is not what that phrase means.
Could you imagine the public information officer like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a breaking fact in this case, a confession about the murder. Hot jock shot wad. So his nickname was likely Wad. And, you know, white aged dude. You know, and that's what we're thinking this means. And everyone's going, shaking their head like, no, 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 no.
This sounds like Barney Fife or the Andy Griffith Show, someone being that clueless.
Yes, exactly.
But what was the actual motive for Dexter's murder? Well, obviously, since money was left behind in Dexter's wallet and suitcase, the motive wasn't robbery. So during the Unsolved Mystery segment, the local sheriff provided a theory. So he suspected that the unidentified driver of the Chevy pickup truck may have run out of gas and gotten stranded at the Bad Route rest area. So he waited there for a long time for someone to come along, and when Dexter pulled into the rest area, the driver may have asked him for help. But Dexter chose to either say no or completely ignore him, perhaps unintentionally because he was hard of hearing. This reaction wound up setting the driver off, so he forcibly hijacked Dexter's Plymouth Horizon, either driving or forcing Dexter to drive the vehicle to another location. At some point, Dexter was beaten and shot to death before his body was concealed underneath the mattress at the remote dump site 17 miles away.
Again, I feel like this person has familiarity with the area. So I don't know if they have familiarity with this rest stop really, but that dump site seems like they have some kind of knowledge of where it was and who owned it, because it was a private, isolated dump site. I do find it interesting, though, that if it's an opportunistic crime, like what is the motive? Just to get the car? Couldn't this person have called 911 and asked for, you know, the police to come and help him drive to a gas station or something to that extent if it was really running out of gas? I think there was a need to hurt someone or a need to exert power or maybe a drug-induced kind of reaction, like you just said, where he pulled up too close, or maybe the person thought he was, you know, not respecting his space or something to that extent, and attacked. But it doesn't seem like it's Oliver Gass.
I mean, I know it was the pre-cell phone era, and I can't confirm with 100% certainty that there would have been a payphone at the rest area. Or even if there was, maybe this guy just didn't have any change to make a phone call. But I do think that even if he did run out of gas, there was something wrong with him mentally that he just got set off and felt the need to beat up and shoot an elderly man. So it's suspected that after the murder, the killer drove Dexter's car to get gas somewhere and then returned to the rest area. Since Fred Siegley saw the man carrying multiple containers, the implication seems to be that he needed gas to fill up his own vehicle, as well as torch Dexter's car to destroy potential evidence. While it seems pretty extreme to brutally murder an elderly man over gasoline, think about the circumstances. If the killer did run out of gas, for all we know, he may have spent all night hanging around the rest area in freezing winter weather with a high wind chill. If he was already a mentally unhinged person to begin with, then he could have been seriously on edge by the time Dexter arrived. If Dexter chose to ignore him or refuse to help, this may have been the breaking point which set him off to commit murder.
Is it possible that this was a common gay hookup area in the 80s when it was not, you know, it was not okay for people to openly express who they were? This is a man who's a trucker, or he's driving a truck, so probably is on the down low or something to that extent. Dexter pulls in unknowingly. He gets propositioned when he says no. Maybe the guy's embarrassed or humiliated or something like that, so he attacks. I don't think the truck was ever out of gas. I think the gas was solely to burn the evidence, in my mind. I can't see gas in my truck being a motive to hurt somebody.
Maybe if the guy is somebody who is very mentally unhinged, and hate to harken back to There's Something About Mary, but that was the place that I first learned when I watched it. I feel like I was quite young. I can't remember what year that came out in, but it was the first time I learned that rest stops were actually places for gay male hookups. And I remember asking about it after, like, is this just for the show or is that legit a thing? But it was actually a thing, like you said, Ash, before it was something that people felt comfortable doing kind of more out in the open. So it is possible that it might have been motivated by somebody being rejected.
I mean, yeah, we marked the graffiti, but there is a possibility that this man could have been at the rest stop for that express purpose. And if Dexter was the very first person who just happened to pass by and this guy made some proposition towards him or said something that got him angry, that could have led to murder.
This theory that we just laid out is a plausible theory, but there are still some things about it which don't make much sense. One of the big questions about this case, which has never been satisfactorily answered, is where did the killer get the gasoline? I mean, this was a very remote, isolated area, and there wasn't exactly a gas station at every corner. I'd assume there would only be a limited amount of places in the area to purchase fuel. And I have to think police checked all gas stations within a reasonable distance to see if anyone remembered a man in a parka driving Dexter's Plymouth Horizon into their station to fill two containers with gasoline. I mean, this was rural Montana in 1985, long before the days of pay at the pump. If anyone wanted to fill up two containers with fuel, they would have to interact with an employee at some point. And we're talking a window of only a couple of hours here. So it's surprising that no one seemed to remember anyone matching the killer's description purchasing gasoline that morning.
You're right, Jules, too, because a lot of rest stops are located like 30 miles from a gas station exit. And then it'll say like, hey, next place to pull over, not for 40 miles. You know, there are signs on the highway in some places where it says, you know, rest stop in 30 miles, next, you know, turn off from highway, you know, 62 miles. So there often are rest stops placed in areas where you wouldn't be able to pull off and go to the restroom at a gas station right off the road. I'm wondering, I don't know if you guys have ever, you know, met families that have like gas pumps on their property, but I know, remember when Y2K was coming, like that was a big thing. People were buying like personal gas pumps. In 85, remember, he goes to this kind of private area where he dumps the body. So he knows these kinds of rural areas clearly in this area. Could it be possible there was a private pump somewhere?
I think it's possible that he could have stole it from somewhere, because this does seem like an area where people would have mm-hmm. gas on their mm-hmm. property. And if he was local, for all we know, he lived on a farm and had his own gas. And if he never ran out of it and just wanted the gas to destroy evidence, he could have just gone back home and got it from his personal supply.
Or from a farm. It seems like it's a pretty rural area, you know, and though they do have gas on there for their tractors and get, you know, all kinds of gadgets.
And even if you can't find where the pump or where the gas is located, if there's vehicles parked on the farm, which there typically would be, you could siphon the gas from mm-hmm. a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But this is another reason why it's odd that the perpetrator left Dexter's money behind in his wallet and his suitcase. Buying an extra can of gas in order to cover up this crime is going to cost money, so why not at least take the cash the victim had on him and use it? Another weird aspect of this case, which doesn't make much sense, is the discovery of Dexter's wallet, suitcase, and clothing scattered around the dump site right before his body was found. If you believe Bill and Cindy Shaw, they were at that place multiple times during the time period when Dexter was missing, but they did not see those items there. And due to the condition of the clothing, investigators do not believe it could have been outside in that winter weather those entire 3.5 months. I don't doubt that Dexter's body was there the entire time, but it's interesting how when he was found, his foot was sticking out from beneath the mattress. I know that other people besides the Shaws used that dump site, so it is kind of surprising to me that it took that long for anyone to notice the foot.
It is really bizarre. And in cold weather, it does get kind of controversial of how closely can you estimate, you know, time of death and how long the body's been exposed to the elements, because the cold really will protect the body. Here, there was animal damage that had been done to some of the extremities, but overall, they said the body was in pretty good condition. I think it's bizarre if you think about these purposely placed clothes and wallet and suitcase, you know, months later. Do you think his body, the foot was purposely placed out, or do you simply think maybe when the animals were kind of scavenging around, they might have knocked the foot out and maybe that's why no one had seen it? It was like a recent kind of shift of the body.
I think it might be possible that at first he was concealed all the mm-hmm. way, but the killer grew impatient and then went back out there and pulled the foot out a little bit, hoping that someone would notice.
Oh my God, that too.
So on the surface, the implication seems to be that after leaving Dexter's body in the landfill, the killer returned to the location, like Robin just said, months later and made it easier for him to be discovered. Perhaps they pulled Dexter's foot from out beneath the mattress and then scattered his personal items around to capture someone's attention. If this person was anxious for his crime to get attention, like we mentioned early on, they might have grown frustrated that no one was finding Dexter, so they decided to speed up the process. But on the other hand, if the perpetrator was yearning for attention, then that kind of contradicts the police's original theory that the murder was an unplanned rage killing.
It does. That it was some opportunistic, like, you know, rage incident. It does make it more questionable. It really mirrors what serial killers do, where there's this craving of fame, right? And infamy. And so for this person, they're going, I placed it on a family property. They should have seen it by now. I'm just going to go back and kind of move the body so they can see it. You know what? I'm going to scatter out some personal belongings. I don't doubt that the items weren't there. I think that they had to go back. So it does scream to me like someone who had killed before and was enjoying the idea that they could follow the case on the media and see their work be discovered.
You guys, I've got a question. So how much confidence do we have in a police department's theories when their other theory was that hot jock shot Wad was to do with a murder?
Aging dude. I mean, I get where they were confused. They thought it was an acronym for poor Dexter.
But like this unplanned rage killing, like how likely are they spot on right now? How much confidence do we have in their ability to get to the heart of what the motive might have been?
It's true. That might be a wrongful assumption, because I'm sure this is an area that's not used to violent crimes such as this. So who knows how many other murders they investigated. So if they were wrong about the graffiti, they could have been completely wrong about the motive as well. So even if Dexter's clothing was scattered out in the open for 3.5 months, that doesn't necessarily mean the killer had it in their possession the entire time. It's possible they dumped Dexter's suitcase with the clothing still inside, but decided to open it and scatter the clothing around days before the body was discovered. A more innocent explanation is that it might not have been the actual killer who did this. An alternate theory is that a random scavenger visited the dump site, found the suitcase, and emptied it. So it was just pure chance that the Shaws showed up a short time later and found the clothing, which led them to discovering Dexter's body. The biggest issue I have with this theory is that it's odd that a scavenger would go through Dexter's stuff and leave his money behind, but then again, if they came across his body, perhaps it scared them off from taking anything and potentially implicating themselves. If it was the killer who scattered the clothing, I just can't think of any other reason why they would return to the dump site months after the crime unless they wanted Dexter's body to be found.
You know, I could see a scavenger also finding the wallet and seeing the name, because remember, this was a highly publicized case at the time, and panicking like, oh crap, I'm going to get implicated in a murder, and just running. But again, think about the setup of this dump site. It's on a family compound, farm-esque kind of place. It's in a very rural area. Are there really going to be scavengers going into a place like that? As a Southern girl, I picture it where you do not step on someone else's private property, like a farm, because I'm very sure they probably are armed and protecting their property. And so is that really a random place you would go start looking for things you could take?
That is true. It sounds like it would have been a very difficult place to find unless you were told it was there.
It's also been up for debate whether the killer might have been a local or someone who was from out of state. So on one hand, since the pickup truck had Arizona license plates, it's easy to assume that he could have hailed from there. After all, if someone who normally lived in the warm climate of Arizona wound up getting stranded at a rest stop during a cold Montana winter, you can see how that might push them over the edge. But on the other hand, would an outsider have been able to find that remote dump site? I mean, it sounds like a location that you would have to go out of your way to visit. It was on private property, and from what I can tell, only a handful of people were allowed to use it for dumping. And not only was it 2 miles away from the highway on a dirt road, but you then had to travel 150 feet away from the road in order to find it. And I suppose if the killer was driving around looking for a place to dump Dexter's body, he could have come across it by chance, but I don't know. If the killer was from out of state, then they certainly lucked out at finding this perfect dumping site, since the body was not found for months and they would have been long gone by then.
I'm with you. I just think it's too random of a location. It's too isolated. And again, when you think about the lay of the land and kind of like what that land was used for, I don't see it being somebody who's just going to stumble upon it and go, oh, look, a dump site. I'm just going to like rummage through this and see what I can find.
But if the killer really did return to the dump months after the fact to scatter Dexter's clothing, then he has to be a local resident, as I have my doubts that someone who hailed from a faraway spot like Arizona would go back there. It sounds like the police were unable to ID the killer's pickup truck from the first 3 digits on the license plate, but even though it had Arizona plates, that doesn't necessarily mean he resided there at that time. I know Clyde Mitchell mentioned that he saw bedding and clothes inside the truck to suggest someone was using it as a living space, so perhaps the driver was a transient with no fixed address who traveled throughout the U.S. and lived in his truck, in which case it would be very difficult to track him down. I don't know, in spite of some reservations, I do have a feeling that there is some truth to the police's theory that the perpetrator murdered Dexter because he ran out of gas and was angry that Dexter wouldn't help him. Because none of the other potential theories really make much sense.
I like Ashley's theory.
Yeah, right. I like this idea that like something like pissed him off. Like I think he propositioned him and got rejected, and his masculinity, the fear of his masculinity being damaged, or the facade of who he was, really sent him into a rage, because it is something like, especially if you're on the down low, if you have a family back at home, there's a like pride thing that you were rejected. A fear thing that you were rejected. I could also see something. I've seen people do the craziest things over the dumbest issues. So like, imagine this empty lot, and here comes Dexter zooming in, and he parks right next to this truck where this guy is basically living. I could see him getting enraged of like, look at all the other places you could have gone, you asshole, you know, like scoot over, move over there. And Dexter, this old guy, like, what's happening? Or like saying like, mind your own business, buddy. And this guy's snapping. So I don't think it was over gas. And don't tell the police here, but I've lived in Arkansas for almost a year. And guess who has their Texas plates still? Me. So I definitely see people driving around town where, you know, I'll be like, oh, cool. They still have their plates and I know that they're residents here in Arkansas.
And when we're talking about like minor things setting killers off, you probably remember the minisode we recorded a few months ago about the murder of Dick Hansen, the 49er Hugs murder. Oh,
yeah. Yes.
Where one of the potential theories was because Dick and his date were just hanging out in their car blocking a mailbox and a killer just pulled up next to them and honked the horn. So it's very possible he wanted to use the mailbox. And because they wouldn't move ahead a few feet, he decided to chase them down for 10 miles and commit a murder, which seems like a ridiculous theory, but some people can be set off and commit crimes over the stupidest things.
Oh, we see it all the time with road rage, right? When there's murders connected to that, people with, you know, seemingly no history of any psychological problems or whatever it is, and something just overtakes them. So it's really difficult to know what it was, but could have been gas. But I don't know, Ash, your theory is sounding like it makes a lot of sense to me, because that would be a reason that he could have been at that rest stop, and being rebuffed by somebody could have been the catalyst for him to lash out. So if this was a serial killer who was stalking random victims, it just seems strange that he would select an isolated rest stop in the middle of nowhere on a freezing November day, because for all he knew, it could have been several hours before someone showed up there. And I guess another possible explanation is that this was a road rage incident in which Dexter and the killer had some sort of altercation on the highway, which set him off. So when Dexter pulled over into the rest stop, he was murdered. But the fact that the perpetrator was seen carrying two containers of gasoline and went to the trouble of torching Dexter's car suggests that the gasoline was possibly the thing which set this crime in motion.
I think he lives 2 miles away from this dump site. He knows in his garage he has two gas cans, and or knows that one of his neighbors has, like you said, a tractor he could siphon from, and or a pump at their farm. And he just killed a man and needs to torch the car to hide evidence. So I'm thinking this is a transplant who has camped out quite a bit around this rest stop, and something set him off, and now he's got to get rid of what he's done.
I think the one thing that doesn't make much sense is if he lives that close to the area, it sounds like the truck was pretty distinguishable. So it is kind of surprising that it wouldn't have been recognized or that there wasn't someone living there who says, I've seen that truck. I know who drives that. So that I think the truck itself might be one piece of evidence which points to him being from out of state or something. But on the other hand, like you said, how would he have known where to find this area to dump Dexter's body?
Robin, quit making sense, please.
Sorry. All right, let's talk about Shotwad again. Let's go.
And what about like the whole part about him having like pillows and blankets in there? Well, what if, like Ashley said, was correct? If he did like to meet men at rest stops, then maybe it wasn't because he was sleeping in his vehicle. Maybe he was having, because it was freezing, right? Even if there's a bathroom there, it's going to be really cold.
Oh, so cold.
So maybe better to go in your vehicle if you want to have a private sexual encounter. So that could have explained those things. And it could also be one of those things that's like a red herring that makes you think, oh, well, he's obviously on a road trip. That's why those things are there. But like you said, Ash, he could live 2 miles down the road and that's where he got the gas from.
And for all we know, like maybe he stole the truck, or maybe he stole the plates or something, and the truck actually belongs to someone who's from out of state and has no idea that a killer stole their truck. But I'm not even sure I agree with the theory that the killer murdered Dexter because he wouldn't be able to provide him with assistance. I have a feeling that he might have decided to kill Dexter no matter what he did. If Dexter hadn't pulled over into the rest area that morning, this guy may have murdered the next person who did. He just wanted to steal someone's car in order to acquire gasoline for himself, and since Dexter was a frail elderly man who wouldn't put up much of a fight, I'm sure he probably seemed like an ideal target. If Dexter was killed simply because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, cross paths with an unstable person, then this is an especially tragic story. We don't know the exact time Dexter was abducted from the rest area, but it seems like the next people who arrived there were Fred Siegley, the custodian, and Clyde Mitchell, the maintenance supervisor, who both would have been able to provide the perpetrator with assistance if he had run out of gas. So that makes the crime all the more senseless.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the reality to me is that this is somebody who needs attention. So I think he's killed before. I do think it's very, very possible Dexter was just this completely random being that entered the scene. And like you said, it would have been the next person who stumbled upon it. It's like they had a need not only to kill, but also a need to be known for that kill based on what we see with the evidence.
And do we even know that this perpetrator did indeed run out of gas? What if he used all of this gas or got the gas from both gas cans and he used it to torch Dexter's car?
That's what I think.
Yeah, and he just told Siegley that he had run out of gas.
Exactly. Like, I never thought about it that way, but that's always been the police's assumption that he needed to get it. But you're right, if he had his own private stash of gas on his property and he just was wanting to use it to torch the vehicle, then that explains a lot why they never found a paper trail or any record of someone matching his description purchasing gas that morning. And it pretty much answers a lot of the stranger questions.
Yeah, I definitely have thought that the whole time. Like, I don't think gas was his need. I think gas was his need once he had a dead body and evidence that he needed to get rid of.
You have to feel sorry for the entire Stefanik family, especially David, who had to experience the brutal murder of his father less than 1 year after his mother passed away. Unsolved crimes which occur under such puzzling circumstances are particularly difficult, since no one can understand why they happened. After all the consideration, I do think that the theory that Ash brought up is the strongest theory, but I still can't help but feel that there might be something missing here, and there are a few things about the crime which don't add up to me.
After all this time, the murder will be very difficult to solve, and I'm not even sure the killer would still be alive today. But as we've seen during these past few years, a lot of older cold cases have been solved, so you can never completely lose hope. So if you happen to have any information about the unsolved murder of Dexter Stefanik, please contact the appropriate authorities. Jules, Ashley, any final thoughts on the case of Dexter Stefanik?
I mean, this is, like you said, Robin, you don't ever lose hope, because in these cases, time becomes our friend at a certain point. That it takes one person who has a breakup or a divorce or a death in the family that all of a sudden they feel free enough to talk about either what they did or what someone has confessed to them. There's no fear anymore. There's no fear of retaliation from somebody. So it takes one piece of evidence, one conversation to get a piece of information that could solve this case. So if anyone listening has any information, please contact the appropriate authorities. And my heart really goes out to this entire family and to Amy. They've all suffered through so much prior to Dexter's death, right? There had been the loss of their mother and their grandmother. Poor Amy had just gone through a divorce and is raising her kids. And, you know, had a relationship with Dexter, maybe not something she wanted to turn into a marriage, but she loved and cared about him. And then all of a sudden, there's this horrific, senseless murder of this poor old man who is, again, discarded like trash. It's such a sad case. My prayer is that it is that one tiny piece of information that comes forward where we'll be able to get answers.
You know, this was really interesting because it's one of those rare cases that I feel like going in, I really don't have a clue what happened. But the more we talked through this, I feel like I've got a much greater grasp on what potentially did. And I'll echo your sentiments, Ash, and that my heart breaks for the family. To lose Vivian and then to lose Dexter in such a brutal, inexplicable manner, I can't imagine the burden that goes along with that for Dexter's family, for Amy, for her five children. It is just, It's heavy. It's a lot to have to deal with. And so I really hope that somebody comes forward, because I think that in all likelihood, this is a local person. It's a local individual, and I'm sure somebody close to them likely suspects them. And I agree with Ash in the sense that this likely isn't their first murder. They're probably a predator and they've done it before, and they likely did it again if given the opportunity. So I don't know, Robin, is there evidence in this case, forensically speaking, that is left behind that could potentially in the future tie the perpetrator to the murder of Dexter Stefanik?
I'm not sure there is, because this was 1985 before DNA was being collected, and pretty much all the forensic evidence was destroyed when the car was set on fire. And I haven't heard anything about them being able to find anything in there, which points to an outsider. But I guess it's possible there could be DNA on maybe the clothes or the suitcase, some of the items found at the dump site, but they just didn't consider that possibility back in the 1980s. So that would be interesting to find out if they still have those items in their possession, because for all we know, if they did testing on it, maybe they will find DNA on there that does not belong to Dexter, and maybe if they use it for genetic genealogy, maybe it will lead them to a suspect. But yeah, I've been haunted by this case for over 30 years now because I saw it on Unsolved Mysteries as a kid when it aired on TV, and it was pretty terrifying to me. And like I mentioned, it pretty much gave me a fear of isolated rest stops because I've seen so many segments on that show where bad things happen to people at rest stops. But this is definitely a perplexing case. But I do have to admit that after we talked about it and hearing some new theories here, I have thought about this case in a different light. And pretty much before, I thought it was a whole running out of gas thing, which set this guy off. But now I do think it's possible it was something else and that maybe he legitimately was there for a gay hookup. And then when Dexter rejected him, it set him off. It's just, but it is one of those cases where it's so perplexing that any theory would not surprise me. So thank you very much for listening to our bonus mini-sode on Patreon. And thanks for supporting us, of course, on Patreon. And next month, we are going to release another bonus mini-sode about a case from Unsolved Mysteries.